This podcast is not safe for work and will feature movie spoilers. It will feature scenes described of a graphic nature. It will contain language which most listeners may find offensive. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is bonus episode number 99. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. On bonus episode number 99, this is Challenge Teapots August 2018. This is a listener reviews for my selection, which came out at the start of the month. I chose a little movie by Wes Craven from 1972 called The Last House on the Left. You guys submitted reviews. We had tons coming at the last minute because you guys never ever let me down. It had nothing to do with the shame campaign on Facebook. You guys just got off your own backs at the end, sent those in for me, and we have a plethora of reviews to get through. Before we get to that though, this is the third of five planned episodes this week. On Monday, we put out our Summer Teapots Top 10 Series, the 1987 edition. Yesterday, I put out my bonus review of Revenge ahead of its release on digital HD on the 7th of September. We're obviously doing Movie Club today. Tomorrow, we drop our 5-year anniversary show. And once again, I'm just kicking out a lot of warnings for this one. If you're coming for full movie reviews and the usual content, you're not going to get that. It's got a lot of drunk content. It's got a lot of people talking over the top of each other's. It's about 5 hours of pure joy and nonsense. So if that doesn't sound like something you're interested in, skip it and rejoin me on Sunday when The Baz returns with Bazzy Horror episode number 42, his third and final installment in the Wrong Turn franchise, looking at Wrong Turn 5, Bloodlines, and Wrong Turn 6, The Last Resort. So that'll be coming on Sunday, closing at 5 podcast episodes in 1 week. I don't think I'll be doing this again. I think I like the medium that I have of between 2 and 3 a week. I think that's sustainable. 5, definitely not. Truth be told, I'm recording this very late on Wednesday night to make sure that it arrives in your inboxes on Thursday morning, so just gearing that and sliding out for you all just so you can check it out. So there we go. Right, I'm going to take my first break. We have lots to get through. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear a little bit of music. You're going to hear the trailer for The Last House on the Left. And when we return, we're going to be doing your reviews and a whole hell of a lot more. All that and more, and a whole hell of a lot more, coming right up, right after this.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast Cure All, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Get on, get off, get on, 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 get on Marie and her friend.
I feel like a woman for the first time in my life.
Two girls from the suburbs going to the city to have a good time.
Oh, this is my roommate, Sam.
Hi, girls.
This is my sister, Martha. Martha, these girls, want to buy some grass.
Four killers on the loose, also looking for a good time.
And the road leads to nowhere.
They meet in the last house on the left. What began as a birthday party ends as a nightmare.
I want to give you something.
I don't want that.
It's worth a lot. I want to be your friend.
No, you want to get free.
I want to be your friend. Are you all right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm fine.
Just what did happen in the last house on the left? Dr. Collingwood lived there.
Are you sure we're not going to put you folks in any trouble?
No nonsense. Our home is yours.
His wife lived there.
I've always dreamed of a man who could take me easily.
So did their daughter, Marie. They all lived there.
Junior.
To avoid fainting, keep repeating to yourself, it's only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie. Last house on the left.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for this movie club review segment. This is the listener reviews for Wes Craven's Last House on the Left from 1972. Let's kick into our reviews. And up first, there's our good buddy, David Garrett Jr. He says, hello, Duncan. I'm submitting my August movie club review of The Last House on the Left. For me, I've seen this film a handful of times. This actually was one of the few films that my dad didn't want me to see when I was growing up. I did see this when I was in high school and it really had an impact on me. I believe it was the first exploitation film I'd ever seen. This wasn't the goriest film I'd ever seen, but it had a bleak realism that was new to me. Since this viewing, I still feel dirty every time I watch it. There's something about it that intrigued me though. I have sought out The Virgin Spring as well as The Night Train Murders after viewing this. What I've taken from these films is that there's a haunting tale of the stealing of innocence from her teenage character as she enters adulthood. That aspect of the film is disturbing, but without it we don't get the emotional attachment when the parents exact their revenge. I'm not a fan of the booby-trapped angle that was used and I feel it's a bit too comical. Speaking of comical, I despise the police and their bumbling antics in the film. I've heard that this was put in due to when the film was released, as the subject was way too heavy, and it was Wes Craven's way of trying to alleviate that somewhat. I just don't think it holds up and hurts the movie. The acting in the film I think is good, outside of the police. Most of the soundtrack fits well, especially the Road to Nowhere song. Some of the music selections don't work for the tone of the film and goes a long way with the slapstick comedy that just doesn't fit. I do still find this to be an important film despite its flaws. I would give it a 4 out of 5 even though how I feel after I watch it every time. Can't wait to see what you have in store next month and keep the content you keep rolling out. David Garrett Jr. Thanks very much for submitting that in, David. You were the first one to get your review in as well. It's not a movie that I kind of look forward to forcing anyone to go back and watch, in fairness, but I'm glad that you did and I'm glad that you submitted your review into the show. I look forward to hearing what you review from my pick next time. And up next, a review in from our buddy Mike Mirabella. He says, hello again, Duncan. Sad I haven't had time till now to write for Movie Club. However, The Last House on the Left marks an alternative landmark in my horror timeline. Going into it, I had nothing but positive hopes, but they were quickly shattered. Confused? I was too. Let's get things straight. Love what Craven has given the genre. Also, CD70s fix holds a special place in my thriller killer heart. So what happened? In short, while watching this film, I realised two things. One, if I want to see a home invasion, I can watch the news. And two, Rob Zombie has ruined my view of American 70s cinema in more than one way. It's not that I feel the film was overrated, the individual components are, the setting and characters just don't work for me here. Deconstructed and reassembled in a different fashion, I could have loved this film, however after watching it a few times I sold my copy. There is a certain irony here as Zombie is responsible, indirectly, for me leaning more towards European cinema. In my late teens, I started an odd quest to acquire as many films sampled by White Zombie, which led me down a spiral of cult films to Euro horror. Especially the work of Rollin, which continued to Franco, Fulci, Diodato and D'Amato, etc. By the time I made it to Last House and Left, it sadly wasn't what I wanted in a film, foreign or domestic, from this era. For a score, 2.5 stars. Now, off to watch Burial Ground. Cheers. Thank you very much for that review, Mike. It's a weird one. It's a weird one for sure. It's one of those ones as well where it shows a clear difference in terms of tone and content compared to what Italians were putting out in 72. You think 72, you think it should be Four Flies and Grey Velvet era, kind of Argento stuff, and you're starting to get the Sergio Martino stuff kicking out, and Don't Torture a Duckling isn't far away from this point, you know. Lizard in a Woman's Skin, or Woman in a Lizard's Skin, I can never get that title right, are all coming out about this time, and this is a completely different beast. Interestingly enough, I'd be interested to see what you make of Night Train Murders, Mike, if you have checked that out, because I believe that's probably hitting the tone and aesthetic of what you like, but still covering the parts of Last House on the Left that didn't work for you in a better way. So I'd be interested to check that out. But once again, thanks for sending the review, buddy. Always good to hear from you. And next, coming in via our Facebook page by private message, came from Adam Claver. He said, my first encounter with the original Last House was on a grainy tape preceded by a lethargic depression. But that's a compliment to the savage nature of the film. The strikes against it, some bad acting, the buffoonish cop antics and amateurish production. As far eclipsed by the moral complexity and movie's brutal tone. If this movie had teeth, it would bite. 4.5 out of 5. Thank you very much for submitting that in, Adam. Good to hear from you. Swing into our next review by email. It's our good buddy Andrew Neil. He says, hi Duncan, I watched this last Sunday and have thought about the film since then, and I wanted to say this about it. Firstly, I have seen this film before about 10 or 11 years ago and I found it hard to watch then. I saw the remake at the cinema and was not impressed, especially that ending, what the fuck? Anyway, I found this a very hard watch, the innocent girls who made one mistake and ran into the wrong people. I think the reason I find it so hard is I'm currently on a true crime binge, and while watching this film, especially the first half with the girls, I could believe that this was actually tame compared to some of those stories, but seeing the distress in the girls made the whole thing feel so real to me. I'm not sure I was in the right place to see this film this time. Anyway, I think that this is really well made. It's a shocking film that you could try and read a message from, but it's really just about being shocking. The fact that neither of the girls survive, and while the parents win, it's not a given. Do you wonder if they maybe lose the final battle? Overall, I think everyone who likes horror should watch this at least once. I can imagine many people watching it today and find it tame with some of the films we have been putting in this context. The statement for me, it's only a movie, it's only a movie, only a movie, never rang so true when I watched it the first time. As a rating, I have to say 5. There are few films that evoke a feeling, whether good or bad. So I have to say that whilst it's not good to say I like this, I have to say that the film can be there to evoke emotions, did the job amazingly well. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much for that review, Andrew. I know you get in. I know you're concerned that you might not be able to hit that curfew deadline for the review, but you got in, buddy. Always great to hear from you. And we'll do one more review by audio, then we'll take a very short break for promos. Let's play a little review from our buddy Ricky Morgan. Ricky says,
"Hello, Duncan, and everybody listening to the show. It's your old buddy Rick, and yes, I'm recording this while driving down the road. It's kind of my thing now. But when I saw that the reviews were going to be for Last House on the Left, I had to jump in. This movie was a game changer for me. And I'll get into some of the review part of it, but really I just want to talk about the impact of this movie and what it means to me as a movie fan or a horror fan. Up to this point, most of the horror that I had seen had been your basic, you know, slasher flicks or, well, yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street, that kind of stuff. So, an old video store called Next Door, which is on the campus at UT Martin, Tennessee, kind of a head shop, but they had, you know, DVDs, not DVDs, VHS that were just stuck, you know, Velcroed to the wall, and you would rent them and just, you know, pull them off the wall and take them. And that's the first time I ever seen anything about Last House on the Left. And it was the orange box, you know, on the VHS that had the slogan on there of from the mastermind of, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. So this is like when they reissued it because Nightmare on Elm Street was doing so well. And that intrigued me because at the time, Nightmare on Elm Street was the most impressive thing I had seen at that time, just with the wackiness of not being able to distinguish dream state or real, just the fantastic part of it, and downright scary at times. And so yeah, I was already pulled in, and they were selling their movies off. I guess they were jumping to DVDs or whatever. And because, again, like I said, I'd never even heard of this movie at the point. So I purchased it for $2, I believe, and took it home and was just absolutely blown away because, in my mind, I'm thinking the horror that I'd been exposed to before. This movie probably also leads to why I like so much of the giallo and a lot of movies that have that kind of murky, gritty, nasty feel to them, you know, a lot of the sexploitation kind of stuff. I really think this might have been the starting point because this was unlike anything I'd seen before. Everything else had been either, you know, 80s over-the-top horror or it was 70s, you know, your run-of-the-mill 70s stuff, you know, the popular horror stuff. So, checking this movie out, when it got to the point of them being out in the woods, sorry, and Krug and his gang starting to do things to the girls, I literally had to turn the movie off. This is the only movie I've ever had to turn off and take a break from because it was just that heavy at the time. What's amazing about this movie is not what you see, it's what you think you're gonna see. And that's the power of Wes Craven in this movie. Taking back from the background he had up at this point of, you know, when this movie came out, he had been dabbling in some porn material. I don't even know if it's hardcore or not, but you can definitely feel that in some of this. This movie is super gritty, and again, what sets it apart is the realism of them. Now, I know that you can kind of say, yeah, whatever, but when it comes down to the kind of things that happens to people, it's not going to be some guy with a hockey mask, right? It's going to be this kind of situation where, you know, the wrong people are at the wrong place at the wrong time and meet, you know, the wrong kind of bad people that would do things to people. This is in the news every day, and that's what really makes this movie pack a punch. I let a friend borrow this movie, and the best description I've ever heard of how this movie makes you feel, he said, "I had to go take a shower after watching it. The movie made me feel nasty on many different levels." And I totally understand what he meant, because not only do you feel bad for the main characters, not only do you, you know, associate yourself or feel for these characters, but you also feel the nastiness of what these people are doing or what they're capable of doing. And again, it plays a psychological trick on you to where you think you're going to see more than you really are. And again, that's the whole reason of why I turned it off, because I was afraid of what I was going to see. You hear me say that a lot on the different shows, that they never can put anything on the screen that's more disturbing than what's already in my head. And that really got to me on this one. This movie is brutal. It's nasty. It's got that same appeal that Texas Chainsaw has, that nastiness about it, that grittiness that almost feels like a snub film. And of course there is the comic relief in there. I guess at the time it made sense, and now you look at it and it's pretty hokey. But what's amazing is when you make a remake of this, which I still think is pretty decent, you know, you try to leave that comic element out of it, but you're also leaving out what makes the original so powerful. There was something about the way this film was put together, the low budget, you know, feel of it. Even the conversation of, I've heard, you know, documentaries, you know, behind the scenes stuff, where even the characters in Krug's bunch said that when they would yell cut, they couldn't even look at each other because they felt so disgraced about what they were actually doing. So that's movie making on, you know, on the nth degree of making somebody actually feel something when they're doing this. The fact that you can't even look at each other while shooting this stuff, that says a lot about what was going on in the minds of these folks when they were shooting this movie. For people that don't consider this a horror movie, then what are you afraid of? I mean, I guess people just classify horror in different things. To me, this is top-level horror. This is what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of a loved one being snatched up by somebody with this kind of mind and doing these kind of things. That's more devastating than anything, and you hear it on the news all the time. So I don't understand where people don't, you know, take this as a horror movie. To me, there's nothing more horrifying. Nothing is more horrifying than real life. That's why we have horror movies, to make up fake horror to make us deal with the real ones. Well, this one is more realistic than most. That's the power of this film. You can call it a revenge film. You can call it a home invasion film, however you want to look at it. There's some imagery in this that is timeless, total classic. You can't help but think of the dream sequence where they're in the doctor outfits, you know, when the guy's having the dream and a chisel on the guy's teeth, you know, and, you know, just tells him to open wide and he's going to knock his teeth out. I mean, all those things just stay in your mind. Super powerful film. Super powerful. I'm going to quit yakking. But to me, this is just a top-level experiment in horror. It deserves to be appreciated. It's one of those films that I know they put out the nice, you know, 4K restoration and stuff, and I kind of have a problem with that because I want this movie to stay as nasty and as dirty as it was when I first saw it. So that's that nostalgic thing, and I'm sure it still does, because, you know, when they redid Texas Chainsaw and they released it 4K, it looks fantastic. So I haven't seen the Blu-ray cut of this or the 4K of this, but I don't know, man. When I think of a gritty movie, this is the one I think of. And just a ton of scenes that, to me, are just forever nightmarish. And that's pretty much it for me. I've probably taken up way too much time, but I really, really consider this movie to be one that has to be seen if you consider yourself a horror fan. So there you go. Thank you, Duncan, for letting me come on. Talk to you later.
And thanks to Ricky Morgan for sending that review from his car, live from his car. Right, we're going to take a very short break just now. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. When we return, we continue the reviews. Last House on the Left as part of Movie Club Challenge Teapots August 2018. All that and more coming right up right after this.
This is a test of the emergency podcasting system. Listen to the Psychosemantic Podcast. Politics, movies, and political movies. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, LegionPodcasts.com. The Psychosemantic Podcast.
And welcome back. So let's just kick this off with an audio review straight away. I want to say this is Alan's first time submitting something. I might be wrong about that, and if I am, I apologise, Alan. But this is from Alan McPherson. He says...
Hey Duncan, this is Al McPherson, or Al from Halifax, or Chef Al, or just that guy in the Facebook group. I just wanted to throw you a quick bit of feedback for the movie club, wherein you'd be discussing Last House on the Left. This is a kind of a tricky one to review as a movie. It's when I tried to rewatch it this time, I mean, I succeeded in rewatching it, I'm not a complete idiot. I really tried to simply watch it as a movie without any of the cultural baggage, or tried to avoid experiencing it as a bit of film history. And you know what? That's just not going to happen. I watched it, you know, for the first time 30 years ago. Yeah, Jesus. That'd be about right. And it's one I don't come back to that often. Probably I come back to it more often than I would have thought. I think the last time I saw that would have been over a Christmas holiday nearly a decade ago, when my wife insisted that I buy her a copy of it for a Christmas present. So make of that what you will. Anyway, watching it again, and it actually just would have been the that same old DVD that I had back then, which I think was relatively uncut. It's so hard to say because there's so many different versions floating around now. It's almost Wicker Man bad. So, can I say I enjoyed it? Not exactly. I mean, I don't think enjoyment is a value proposition you're going to get out of a movie like this. On the plus sides, extremely well done in several aspects. I don't even want to call it the, it's beyond just the rape sequences. It's just the sheer ordeal sequences. Are incredibly powerful. I don't, even with all the films that have imitated it, and the way that sort of content is almost casual in some respects, or has been over the course of time since that movie was made, doesn't really diminish how tough it is to watch. And the way it does it in a surprisingly non-exploitative way. I mean, it's just all intensity, and beyond intensity is a lot of like heartbreak involved. There's a real air of sadness about everything that happens, even down to Krug and his quote-unquote fam. You know, well, I guess some of it's blood family, the rest isn't. But it's as horrible a villains as they are. It's pretty great to see everything that they do have a physical and emotional toll on them. So all of that I can't take away from it. I mean, that stuff is incredibly powerful filmmaking. When it gets to the revenge part of the rape revenge, that's where we get into, yeah, I get what you're going for, but you're not exactly sticking the landing. It almost becomes an academic exercise at that point. And whatever kind of amateurish, inexperienced, ballsy happenstance and luck that created the intensity earlier on is gone out the window by the time we get into the family exacting their revenge on their... on their house guests, as you will. So that would be in the middle ground of disappointment level. And then you get into the stuff that is just downright bad. And I think probably everyone's going to say this. That's the wackadoo, yuck, Keystone redneck cops. That's just inexcusable. There's just... It goes so far beyond... not adding anything. It really distracts from everything. If your intent as a filmmaker was to try to lighten the mood, well, that's kind of tone deaf to the very thing that you were doing. If you wanted that to come off as more of satirical, look how helpless and foolish the police are to defend people from these human monsters. Well, you didn't do that very well. And it came off almost more classist and a shot at, I don't know, rural cops rather than the policing system. And I think you could have actually have made that kind of a narrative work, just maybe not with the yucks so much. But anyway, I suspect you're going to get a lot of comments about that, so I really don't need to say anything more other than it was just awful. Now, the only other thing I would add, and this is the other thing that I know people will complain about this movie and call it a failure, and that's the soundtrack. So as much as there's a love for The Road Leads to Nowhere, the rest of the jangly, banjo-y, on-the-road folk music stuff, I know a lot of people really dislike that. And I can kind of see why. But I actually don't mind it at all. I think it kind of works for this movie in a weird way. And as much as Craven went on the record as saying that the anger and the violence of this film was a bit of a response to Vietnam and the horrors of war coming into the American living room, I can't help but ignore that a bit, largely because that was a little bit before my time. I'm not that ancient, but, well, okay, I am ancient enough to recognize the early 1970s when this movie was made. And what was a major force in movies, especially that sort of new wave American independent film, in the sort of late hippie era, moving into the Vietnam era, there's a whole raft of films that are where the heroes or anti-heroes are sort of the lovable rogue criminals on the lam. So from everything from Easy Rider to Midnight Cowboy to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid to Bonnie and Clyde, you have all of these movies that are pile on that have this sort of like nihilistic tone and present these, you know, hardened criminals in some respects as being these sort of lovable rogues. And those films are punctuated by a lot of like folk music influence on singy-songy songs. And I always took the soundtrack in Last House on the Left to be kind of like a reference to that, almost like thumbing the nose at that. Kind of like, oh yeah, you're lovable rogue criminal guys. Well, maybe they might be a little bit more like this than Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, if you know what I'm saying. But anyway, that's about all I got. If you want me to give a Netflix rating, probably the best I can do is a 3, largely on the strengths of the bits that that it does right. And that even might be a little bit generous. But again, I have a hard time looking at this as a movie in and of itself and less of, in a weird way, a cultural cornerstone. So that's all I've got about for that. Have yourself a great night, Duncan. Take care. Bye-bye.
And thanks very much to Alan for submitting that review. And always great to hear from you guys out there. I'm glad that when people get an opportunity, they can send in something in an audio clip. One, it saves me reading things out. And as we've all established pretty quickly, my pronunciation of certain things is pretty bad, pretty terrible. But I love just, in general, hearing from you guys out there. And yeah. Just wherever you can record it, just record it, send it through to me. And also great to hear, like, I obviously put out there, you know, to kind of relive some of those elements of when you saw the movie first time. And it's weird how some people came to it much later, but some people were on the cusp of when this movie came out, you know, when it was starting to hit that banned list, if you were in the UK, the Video Nasties, etc. It's always great to hear from you guys out there. Thanks very much for sending that in, Alan. So let's do, let's see, Dern Wilson from the Psychosemantic podcast has wrote, "My dearest Duncan, I was probably 14 the first time I saw The Last House on the Left. That's around the time when I started paying attention to directors instead of just movies. I know I say this a lot for me, there is a special soft spot for Wes Craven, so I did my first horror deep dive with his stuff. I already liked Nightmare on Elm Street and more mainstream movies like that, but as a young teenager is prone to do, I wanted to see his movies that people tried to not let me watch. I wanted the fucked up stuff my uncles wouldn't rent for me. So first chance I got, I spent a weekend with this movie. I don't think I was ready for what unfolded in front of me as I sat there alone in my basement bedroom that night, but I made it all the way through. Sure, the bumbling cops with the Dukes of Hazzard style theme music felt out of place, and more so the older I get. Aside from that, it blew my mind. Krug and Weasel and the rest of the villains were scarier because they were just savage people. If I remember correctly from a biography I read, the name Krug or Kruger came from a childhood bully Craven had, and man, I wonder what kind of shithead he must have been. There was a definite pit of dread in my stomach as the movie went on, and I soon realised it was not going to end well for Mary or Phyllis. The parental revenge at the end was cathartic, but still I felt off the rest of the weekend. Then I went back to school and told my friends that they needed to watch it. It really hammers home that never let them get to the second location saying. I'm pretty sure The Last House on the Left did more than anything else to discourage me from buying drugs from people I don't know. Nowadays, it still works on a level I'd imagine comparable to when it came out. I know that there was a story of people calling the cops on David Hess because they couldn't separate him from the part, from that part, but in the era of Alex Jones, who can point fingers when it comes to grasps on reality. I do not think it's overrated and it earns its place in the pantheon. Last House on the Left is still brutal as fuck no matter what year it is. It gets a 4 or 4.5 stars, but I've now seen it twice in 2 years, so it will likely be some more time before I snag that disc off the shelf again. Sorry I didn't record audio, but your voice is sexier than mine anyway. Later, dude. Dern. Thanks very much for sending that in, Dern. I know that you have a soft spot for the man they call Craven. We've spoken about it many, many times, and I dare say we will speak about it many, many more. Which means it's time to swing it over to our good buddy Tim Walker, who says, "Hey Duncan and Teapots people." All right, Last House on the Left, the infamous 1972 drive-in / grindhouse classic horror film produced by Sean S. Cunningham and directed by the late Wes Craven. It's a loose horror remake of the Swedish film The Virgin Springs, directed by Ingmar Bergman, can never pronounce anything, fuck my life, and starring Max von Sydow. I can at least pronounce that. I had no idea where I stood in this one, since this had always been a movie I had mixed feelings about. When I heard that it was your pick this month, Duncan, I didn't know what to expect. With some review choices, I knew right away that I'd have positive reviews like Fulci's Zombie or Night of the Comet. Some were clearly going to be negative like Cabin in the Woods, and some I found out after watching they'd be negative like The Cottage. Some movies I was okay with, so they'd be mostly positive like 1922 vs. Gerald's Game. Last House on the Left is wide open. My first viewing was in the early 2000s, maybe 2003, and I was not blown away by it. Either in a negative way, it had little to no impact. I wondered why it was so popular as it was. I can see to some extent why it would be infamous or disturbing for a movie from 1972, but it didn't strike me that way though, yet I never hated it. When I saw the Italian take on this movie called The Night Train Murders a few years later, I thought it was a far superior movie. I know you feel the same, Duncan. That movie worked for me. I felt what Aldo Lado and company wanted me to feel. It made me wonder why I didn't feel the same about Craven's movie. That prompted me to give Last House a rewatch, and I did once or twice in the intervening years. Those viewings made no difference. I had the same takeaway. It was a movie that just flat out didn't work for me, yet I could appreciate its impact on the horror genre. I could see merits in it, but on the whole I had mixed feelings. For this review, I gave it another rewatch. I always try to, even when I'm nearly certain my opinion won't change. Well, with this watch, it did, at least a little. I am now a fan of Last House on the Left. Not that much, mind you, but I now appreciate it, and not just in an academic way like I did before. Maybe the fact that this time I saw it in high definition, that might have helped. So, what's good and what's bad? The acting, other than David Hess and the two girls, wasn't good. The comedy scenes still don't work for me, but it just doesn't bother me as much as it used to. I tried to keep my mind on The Town That Dreaded Sundown from 1976. Also had some out-of-place comedy that grounds the movie to a halt. I still like that movie overall. The music on Last House used to bother me a lot more, and to some extent it still does. There's some music that just doesn't work, it's too goofy. There's other bits that fit their scenes perfectly though. Actually, my favourite scene in the film didn't change at all since my first watch. That's the scene right after Krug rapes Mary and she slowly gets up and wades to the pond. Krug looks genuinely horrified at what he did. Even though the three thugs know that they've crossed a line at that point, Krug takes a gun and shoots her in the water. There's something about that scene I love. Maybe it's how peaceful and serene the pond and forest are compared to the violence being perpetrated by the people. It could be how Mary looks when she gets into the water and her long hair spreads out. I'm not sure if I can put my finger on it, but it's the best scene in the movie in my opinion. The revenge that comes later is a bit far-fetched, it's a bit Home Alone if you know what I mean. Nevertheless, I'm more or less okay with it. I still prefer the revenge of the parents in the Night Train murders. Sorry, I know I'm an Italian file and as far as horror is concerned, but I really think that the Italian movie does it better in this case. So how would I rate this one? Using classic Netflix and current Letterboxd ratings, I give it 3 out of 5 stars. I'm still not a huge favourite and still not a huge fan, but I'd say I'd like it now. I don't feel negative or neutral to it anymore. The low budget grindhouse nihilism of Last House on the Left used to leave me a bit indifferent at best. Now I can get into it at least. It's not my favourite Wes Craven by any means. Actually, my favourite Craven movie is Serpent in the Rainbow, but that is for another review. A good choice this month, Duncan. I do love it when I reevaluate a movie and my opinion goes up. Here's hoping the next T-Putz Movie Club film will be a movie that goes up in my estimation as well. Take care, Duncan, and T-Putz peeps, Tim. Thanks very much for submitting that in, Tim. Great that we got something slightly more on the positive side. I know that Cabin in the Woods left a bad taste in your mouth, sir, and once again, I apologise for that. But I like the balance. I like the balance of these things. Thank you very much for sending your review in. And up next, never missing a beat, is our good buddy Don Anelli. He has wrote, for this additional listener challenge, it was a first-time watch of the original Last House on the Left. Yes, this was a film missing from my collection until now, only because I'd never got around to it before, and I finally got a chance to see it. After finally doing so, this was quite the entertaining entry, even with a few minor problems. It works best with the sleaze apparent throughout here, with a group of thugs demoralising, humiliating and finally getting to the main crux of their attack, which is still shocking all these years later. It's incredibly effective at getting the final half set up with a believable crime that serves up for the motivation of the parents' revenge against the thugs, which is there this one somewhat falls down in that final sequence because it's clumsy, it comes off as an afterthought compared to what they've inflicted against the daughter and just doesn't feel as rewarding as it should be. Combined with a lot of unfunny comedy from the trailing police officers, despite a couple of sequences that raised a genuine chuckle, and it had some entertaining moments which make for a solid, if what somewhat flawed entry overall, I would go with a solid 3.5 out of 5 on the Netflix scale for this one. Thank you very much, Don. Always love it when you submit them in. One of the more consistent people that gets a chance to submit them through, and I know that not everyone has the time, but I do greatly appreciate the fact that you always set away some time to send these in. And I find myself really keen, like with the ones that keep submitting reviews in, to see where you land on these movies, because I start to build up profiles of what I think Tim really likes, what Don likes, what Dern likes, what Lee likes. And I get these ideas that I start to feel I can maybe judge your film tastes, and every now and again you either land spot on with what I think, or you make me think I don't know this person at all. So it's always great to hear from you. Can't wait to hear from you again soon, Don. And it would not be a movie club without a final review, an audio recording from my brother from another mother, all the way over in Canada. A man that I would just say is basically Scottish. You've got a name like Lee Russell, you are pretty much fucking Scottish. That man drinks more whiskey than I do, and that is saying something, and the man knows the good shit while he's at it. Yeah, I love closing out these reviews with audio reviews from Lee. So let's see what Lee thought of Last House on the Left.
Okay, movie club. So here I am watching a movie I never thought I'd have to watch again. 1972's Last House on the Left. But you put it on the list, Duncan. Yes, you did. Not a movie I like. There's no doubt in my mind that it is kind of the quintessential video nasty. There's no denying that, I think. But I think its reputation kind of far outweighs its actual merit as a film alone. Go into some positives for it. It does have that gritty, in-your-face cinema verite shooting style. A lot of what's depicted on film feels fairly real, despite the like really just apparent low production values, the dodgy acting, the often pretty stilted and shitty dialogue. It overcomes a lot of those problems just because it is so raw and in your face. Like, real murder is very messy, very gross, degrading, and inhuman. And this film does capture those qualities very well on screen. So much so that sometimes it does feel like you're watching a snuff film. And that's very well done. Those aspects of the film are really, really well done. The film wants to shock people and make them uncomfortable. And this film does do that for a lot of people. It does that for me in certain areas of the film. Certain scenes do still make me cringe a little bit. In that regard, it works. But there's plenty of other films that sort of do this same thing and have more to them. Again, you can't deny the shock value and its influence on the genre, but it's throw every shitty thing we can think of into the plot mentality. It starts to really grind on me after a while, to the point where the multitude of plot contrivances that are in the script of this film, they start to become unforgivable for me. They start to make me just sort of roll my eyes and groan. I mean, while this film is inspired by Bergman's The Virgin Spring, it really, for me, maybe I'm just missing this, but it really lacks a lot of the philosophical questions raised. The Virgin Spring had a lot more going on. It was obviously contemplating the consequences of murder and revenge. This film really doesn't do that all that much. It's strictly rape revenge, and I mean, as an exploitation film, I guess that works, but still doesn't work for me. One real problem I have with this is the bumbling comedy cops. They're this turd-flavored cherry on the top of a crap cake for me, and their scenes are just this really unwelcome, tension-breaking excuse for poor juxtaposition. It just baffles me why they stuck this in here. I levy the same criticisms to a film like The Town That Dreaded Sundown with its comedy cop. That just, it often derails that film, which otherwise is a pretty dark and effective exploitation film. I also feel like David Hess's score at times really goes against the mood they're trying to set in this film. They sort of place certain cuts from his score in really bad spots, and it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like a lot of nasty films. I don't need happy endings. I love one of the films that directly lifts this plot. The Night Train Murders, I think, is fucking fantastic. And it's equally as dark, but a lot less graphic. Just unlike that film, this film always leaves me cold in a way where I just don't want to watch it again. And it's not because it necessarily turns me off because it's so graphic and gross. It's just, I don't know, I don't think the entire package really works all that well. And that's where I sort of sit at it. I will give it a little bit of credit, so it's going to get 2 stars out of 5 for me on the Netflix grade scale, but this is just a film I don't like. I think it's overrated, and I hope to never have to watch it again. But there we go. Looking forward to seeing what other people say about this film. I'm kind of wondering if I'm the only dissenting voice here, because, I mean, this is a fairly well-known and beloved sort of quote-unquote classic of the exploitation genre. But we'll see, and see you guys next movie club. Bye-bye.
There we go. Actually, don't know what, once again, this is another one that throws me kind of out of loop. I thought Lee would like this movie more. But I appreciate everything that he says in there. It is one of those ones that's really difficult. To me, once you've... I completely understand its importance, but I think once you've seen that kind of echo stuff that Tim said, once you've seen Night Train Murders, I think the flaws apparent are magnified in a viewing of Last House on the Left when you come back and view it. Aldo Lado just did it better and nastier. And it, you know, it's weird. I will say that the Arrow print of Last House on the Left is pretty fucking incredible, and it's probably the best that movie's ever going to look. Thank you very much to everyone that submitted in a review. I love doing these. We're going to keep these rolling, and I will be announcing a week today the movie for September's Movie Club. I'm going to take my final break. When I come back, I'm closing out the show. I'm doing it right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been bonus episode 99. This was Movie Club Listener Reviews as part of Challenge Teapot's August 2018. The movie you had to review was Wes Craven's 1972 grindhouse exploitation movie Last House on the Left. Thank you very much to everyone that submitted a review for the show. Always great to hear from you. Can't wait to do next month's. Yeah, this has been a ton of fun. As always, this is your third episode this week, another two still to come. Tomorrow's episode is a mixture of about 4 hours of drunken rambling and shouting over the top of each other. And Baz answering your questions. Yeah, of course, it's our 5-year anniversary show. It is a hodgepodge of nonsense. And if you are coming in for quality reviews, you might want to skip this one. If you want to hear just what it's like to live inside a Scotsman's house as he argues with his friends about what constitutes a horror movie, then you need to check that out. There's a whole lot of loving for some horror there, and there's a whole lot of disagreements, and there's a whole hour and 40 minutes of the Baz, and that all drops tomorrow as we celebrate 5 years of the podcast Under the Stairs. And then swinging up on Sunday, we look at the final installment of Baz's run at the Wrong Turn franchise as part of Baz v Horror episode number 42. It covers Wrong Turn 5 Bloodlines and Wrong Turn 6 The Last Resort. There's a multitude of ways to check out podcasts Under the Stairs. As always, I say check us out on Apple Podcasts. Come across, subscribe to the feed, that way you get the shows as and when they drop, and access to the entire back catalogue of Teapot's content. Do not stop there though. Continue through and leave us a rating and a review. Ratings are super important. If they're 5 stars, for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes charts we're pushed for people to come across and check out what we are doing. Also, leave us a little review. It's your words to new listeners' eyes as to why they should check out the show. You are not unique. There are people out there that have the same twisted sense of humour as you, like the same sort of stuff as you. And if you can write why you like the show in a review, there's a good chance that one of those people will come across, find it, and join this dysfunctional group that I love to call the Teapot's Extended Family. Word of mouth, also super important. Tell everyone you know, anyone you know that listens to a podcast, or anyone that's listening to anything, music, or looking for something to do, recommend the podcast Under the Stairs. People respect you, believe it or not. And yeah, your word carries some weight, and your recommendation to someone face-to-face as to why they might like this show is worth its weight in gold. And ladies and gents, that's how you do word of mouth. That's how you do it. Come across and visit our website is teapotscast.com. You can click the merch tab there or go directly to our merch site. It's teapotscast.bigcartel.com. You can also check out the podcast on Stitcher Smart Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play, and the TuneIn app. We're on 2 different Facebook pages now. We've got the Facebook group page, which is facebook.com/groups/teapotscast. That's a community page where people post what they're watching, comment on the show. There is funny memes, videos, just all sorts of shenanigans. It's great fun. But we also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/teapotscast. That's where our live streams happen. Thursdays, it's connected to our Instagram page. And we'll be posting new merch there really, really soon. Come across and like that page as well. You can interact with the Baz and the Twin Prongs on social media sections, Instagram and Twitter. Both can be followed at TeapotsCast. Thank you once again for everyone that sent a review in. I'm going to jump out and take my leave of you just now. The podcast Under the Stairs returns tomorrow for 5+ hours of content. Back on Sunday as well, closing out this epic 5-episode week. Wherever you are, ladies and gents, whatever the time zone is and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs, and I am signing off.